So with no further ado, I would love to introduce to you our trusted moderator, Mark Steiner of The Mark Steiner Show, 88.9 WEAA, the voice of the community, and the Center for Emerging Media. Can you welcome Mark, please?
Hi, everybody.
Yeah.
So our panel here, to my immediate right, is Wickham Avery. And I'm dying to see these two things she created. Cordelia's Fool, which is a clown show based around King Lear, which she does all the parts, based on Lear's, all the people in Lear, which should be hilarious, and I really want to see that. And Sing Me a Song, and she's performed everywhere, all over. And is a clown of all types, all kinds of clowns.
Well, I don't know about that.
No?
I'm not a birthday clown. I've never done a birthday party.
You're not a birthday clown?
No, I'm not.
That's too bad.
No, I don't have any need.
And next to her is Coley Tangela. Coley is, this is a secret I like to tell. You see how old Coley looks? Coley was my student when he was 17.
Are you serious?
Yes. Family Circle Theater. Right?
Yeah.
When you were at Forest Park High School.
Mm-hmm.
And now Coley does Tangela's take on my radio show, his weekly humorous commentary on life and more. And he is the creator and teaches the Positive Social Change Theater Program at Augusta Fellows Savage High School. And his kids have come on the show frequently. He's a very funny guy and a very serious man, deep thinker, and a good friend.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And we're gonna have some serious issues, but we're going to have some fun as we do it, too.
That's what he says. Anira Berry is next to him. And she is a laughter therapist. and founder of Laughing Prescription. RX, you say RX?
Laughing RX. Laughing's the best medicine.
And she's a happiness coach. And we're going to find out what that means shortly. And MMCTV, Happy and Healthy TV Show, and author of Laugh Off Stress, Laughter Yoga Exercises. And I thought maybe you might even do some laughter exercises here while we're here to see what that's like as well, right? So we all saw the play. I don't know about you, but when I saw the play, we're not just talking about the play today, but what's under it, what makes us laugh. But I needed that play. I really needed that play. I walked in and laughed from the opening line till it was over. It was just so brilliantly done, I thought. The timing. And see that man back there with the long hair and that wispy beard? He's the one who does all the stuff here and does the timing for all those plays. He's the coach for all that.
Wow.
Stand up, take a bow. That was just amazing to me. That just blew me away. So laughter is something we all do. There's not a culture on the planet, I think. There's not a culture on the planet where laughter isn't key to holding those cultures together. Some kind of farce. I was looking up clowns the other day because I had a woman come on my show. I interviewed her yesterday. She was in a puppet slam, and she's a comedic puppeteer. And so I was looking at puppetry, and even puppetry and comedy, every culture on the planet, every indigenous culture, every quote-unquote advanced culture, whatever the hell that means, are that laughter has to be part of it. I mean, it's what we survive on.
When we're born, one of the first things we do is laugh. You know, children laugh 350 times a day. And And how many times a day do adults laugh?
How did we know that?
How do you guess? Yeah. About five.
350 times a day?
Yeah. You know, think about when you tell a toddler a joke, and as you're telling it, they're going like, they just want to laugh. You know, we're just built it that way, to laugh.
Well, being a father of four-year-old twin sons, and remember when they were young, 300 and what? How many times a day they laugh? That's not the only thing they do. 300. Some odd times
about
a day.
About 350, yeah.
As I have become a master of changing diapers, I can do it one-handed, man, and wipe with a wipe. Boom. Yes, I can.
You do,
and
you change?
Great, he would laugh about it. So that's the best.
Well, you have twins. You probably have to do one with each hand.
Uh-huh. I'm like a diaper-changing ninja.
What were you about to say, Wickham?
I wanted to comment on what you were talking about with the all the different cultures. In the study of clown, you start learning about the history of clown and how far back it goes. In that way, that like the trickster or the shaman are often very connected, so that you are getting the healing of the laughter in your tribe or in your community. Through that person, the same person who brings you health brings you laughter. So I think they've been connected since the beginning of humanness.
Right, and I think that is, I mean, to me that's the key to it all. I mean, it's interesting that what you just said, because in so many ancient cultures, the trickster is also the shaman, the holy person who's in touch with the spirits from the other side. Things that we see in a lot of cultures, things we see as mental illness were creative spirits. You know, I think we make them crazy when they're not necessarily crazy people. I really do believe that's true, because they can't survive in this world. And that laughing is survival. I mean, you know, it's one of the things I learned, like when I started going to this one Native reservation that I go to a lot. I started going to the 90s. I started doing work there with kids. And radio documentary work was laughing is central to their culture. They laugh all the time about anything and everything. Even if you're about to die, you laugh. I'm serious. I mean, it becomes everything's a joke, and they want people to tell jokes and make them laugh. And
That's some of the happiest places in the world that's been noted. What they're known for is getting together like midday, and whether or not it's for a meal or whatever, and just sharing laughs together. And it's really highly valued if somebody can tell a joke and make other people laugh. But that's what a lot of the happy cultures around the world, such as in Sicily or in Finland or in South America.
Like, they laugh in Finland?
Well, but they get together during the day and either share a meal and laugh and for an extended period of time, and that's a really important part of their day.
One thing we were discussing before we came out here, Mark, and you were sharing about your family. I don't know if it's particular of folk who come out of a history of oppression and challenge, Jewish folk, African, black folk, women, I guess now would be Islamic, Arab folk, or Latinx folk, dealing with pain and pressure through laughter. And one of the most historical things you were talking about with your family, you mentioned earlier, Mark, is even when things are serious, sometimes just laughing about it. I don't know, within my family, when someone would pass, you know, white folk here tell me, did you do the same thing too? After there's a funeral, when the family gathers at the central person's home, and usually black folk, we gravitate towards the kitchen, could have a gorgeous home, but we will pile up in a kitchen where the food is, people will be cooking, and then the person who died that we love, we will commence to do an impromptu roast of that person. I mean, I said, I had to stop and say, wait a minute. I love Nana. Nana just died now. Let's not talk about her wig was crooked and the tile. She couldn't find her teeth. Look, why were you doing this? But it was a cathartic act to give reverence, to remember the joy that this person who's no longer physically with us gave us in life. And we use the humor, remembering the beautiful memories of them, to deal with our tremendous loss, our whole and our spirit and our soul, because they were no longer physically with us. And that's what I believe is the beauty of laughter, what you talk about, what you do with your clowning, and what we all do in our own way. And I think we should remember that laughing through our pain. Mm-hmm.
Well, as a laughter therapist, this is what I recommend to my clients is to really try to really use the dark humor. Let's say there's somebody in the hospital and you think, oh, well, how can I laugh at that? Or how can I laugh at a funeral? Or how can I laugh at dark times? But during the tough times in your life is when you really need to find that laughter and, you know, find something to laugh about, whether or not it's the silly design in the carpet, like right here, you know, or any place. You know, you know, you just find anything and just have a laugh about it, because it's very therapeutic and it helps release a lot of the anxiety and the stress and really helps you cope with life. So laughter is really a mechanism for coping. Yeah. And that's been from the beginning of time.
When I teach a lot of comedy and clowning, and one of my favorite exercises to do is probably very similar to what you do, is making people laugh for no reason, just so you understand the physical part of it. But what is fascinating is that it is really similar to crying. It, you know, because sometimes you can't tell if somebody's laughing or crying, because it's that same thing. And I can just be here shaking and close, squint my eyes up, and you know, somebody not knowing would be like, ooh, and just by the sounds coming out, like, it's that thing that Clint.
Oh, sorry, on the microphone.
It's the mic.
I'm trying to be physical, so I'm not good with microphones. It's. That this is good for the radio. I'll do more physical humor. That'll be good.
You can be seen through radio.
No, I forgot where I was, but yeah.
Laughing is like crying.
Yeah, and so it's.
Although it's not.
It's.
In defense of laughter.
Oh, no, I'm all for laughter. I'm not.
Because when you're laughing, it's really a good release. It is wonderful, and you just release all that tension. But laughter has the benefit of doing that and also boosting your endorphins, your happy hormones. Mm-hmm. So you get this wonderful, it's almost like contradictory, you know, when you think about it, but it's amazing how you actually feel happy at the same time you're releasing your stress.
Yeah.
And so you end up leaving the situation or whatever moment feeling in more uplifted way. When you it's very cathartic to cry, but then at the end you're kind of feeling like, oh, you know, like it's a release, but you're not feeling uplifted. But when you're laughing, you feel so uplifted. Like if you notice everybody coming out of like this noises off play, you know, everybody's feeling so uplifted and happy and joyful, and you know, it's those endorphins.
No, absolutely. And in defense of crying, I'm like my mom always encouraged us to have a good cry. But she said only if we were going to feel better afterwards, which is interesting because my mother suffered from depression. So when you take that into account, you start to understand how there can be crying that doesn't serve you and some that does. And I was just thinking about when my mom was very ill. It was right around the time that Robin Williams had taken his life. And so we watched every movie we could of his, and we were sort of crying and laughing at the same time through the whole thing, because he had been such an inspiration to me in my work, and that pain of him taking his own life, which is another really interesting thing.
But there's a connection there too. Yeah. I was thinking about the memorial service, when people die. I was just thinking, reflecting on the last couple of memorial services I've done, because I'm also I can marry you too, and also put you in the ground. I have one of those little things which I like. So, so you may want to get married. Please call me. I'd like to do that. So I realized you start memorial service off with a joke about that person, and it's not even conscious, just to get things kind of rolling and moving. And there's, I think, also a connection between depression and laughter. I mean, a lot of comics wrestle with depression, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I don't spend my life being depressed, but I battle depression a lot, mm-hmm. and sometimes I wake up in the morning and feel really bad, but then you get your way out of it. Whether it's meditation or however you do, you get your way, get out of it, and I think that I don't think there's a day I've ever spent in my life without laughing. Has anybody ever spent a day without laughing? A day with no laughter? You spent a day with no laughter?
Yeah, when a parent has died, yeah, I don't think I laughed.
I mean, when my mother died, I remember my brother and I, at some point during the course of that day, were just hysterically laughing.
That's wonderful that you have that skill, that ability.
I just want to mention about the power of laughter to change our world and our perception, using laughter as a strategic tool. If it wasn't for television programs, like popular television programs like Will and Grace, would we still be perceiving gay, lesbian, and transgendered people as another? But when a show is created, just using their sexuality as a springboard to general humor and realizing, oh, gay folk are just like us, they're just gay, attracted to someone of the same gender, and they go through the same struggles that other people go through, instead of just focusing on that one aspect. Right now, humor's being used, we're talking about mental health. There are some fantastic comics and writers. I can't recall the woman's name, but she wrote a book, and the whole book is about her struggle with depression and schizophrenia. And I have the book, I can't recall the name of it, and she discusses taking certain drugs, altering her state, and sometimes, like, she used to joke about going on a job interview, and she said, I stopped using my antidepressants. What the worst time to do that as I go into this interview? Well, I don't have my drugs to sit down with this person. And that destigmatizes the whole thing that we don't like to talk about in mental health and dealing with it. Humor was that tool when dealing with a lot of things. Currently, right now, with regardless of your political leanings, humor is being used as a tool. Unfortunately, we only like it when the opposite of what we believe in is getting shots. But humor is a tool for that, to enlighten, to get through it. If you're a liberal and progressive, these are not particularly funny times, but when you flip how the message of, oh, now you see who's president, do you like it now, Mr. Conservative? How's it working for you now? You know, that is humor is being used for that. So I think humor can be used as a tool to enlighten and affect change subliminally. We don't even realize it, but before you know it, certain biases have changed.
So let's just try something.
Uh-oh.
Why don't we try something, either one of you two, start with you, Mira, at the end, yeah. This your laughter exercise.
Okay, well.
Let's try one.
Well, we can do a very quick little one. It's like everybody just wave and say hello to the person next to you on the other side and add a laughter to it. Go, ha, 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 ha. And the person behind you and in front of you. Woo-hoo! Want me to do another one? Would you like me to do another one? So we can, how about if we could split up into three, where this section here, from you over this way, you when I point to you, you go, ha. So let's try it. I'll point to you, you go, ha. And you guys here in the middle, when I point to you, you'll go, he. So I'll go, he. He. And you guys over here, you'll be the hoes. So when I point to you, what do you say? You go, ho. So it'd be ha, he, ho,
he,
he, ho,
ho.
That was great. That was great. See, you all just experienced laughter yoga. So that was wonderful. Give yourselves a big hand and go, ho, ho, ha, 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 ho, ho, ha, 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 ho, ho, ha, ha.
But for political correctness, the hoes over there should be recognized as sex workers.
Let's be politically correct about it, please. We could try that. Ha, he, sex worker.
Ha, he, sex worker.
I don't think that'll work in most opportunities.
Might not work, I don't know.
We were talking about this earlier, and there's
a lot of the work that I do in performance is audience interactive, and there's something I think really strong about looking at somebody and laughing, and being seeing the show and being in a room full of people that are just free and laughing can be such a lovely thing, and we all know how infectious that can get as well. Because we were talking about laughing at inappropriate times, and I remember sitting in a show somewhere in D.C., and I thought it was hilarious, and the person I was with, she and I were just laughing and laughing and laughing, and the people in front of us literally got up and left the show because we disturbed them so much with our laughter. And I felt so bad, but I was like, the show is hilarious.
So that's happened to me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but did you really?
In our row,
they weren't feeling it.
They didn't crack a snore. Mm. We had that experience today. There were three or four women in our row, didn't crack a smile during the entire performance. They must have been brain dead. I mean, I don't know how you could do that with that show. It was unbelievable. It was the funniest show I've ever seen, a performance of any kind I've ever seen.
This show. Yeah. Hilarious. It was hilarious.
Didn't you feel great at the end?
Yeah.
Laughing feels so good.
But I often wonder about people who get disturbed by real deep, heartfelt laughter, because you know I'm loud, and I get louder when I'm laughing. Mm-hmm. And I had people, it was a funny thing, like in a film, and I was laughing, and actually a guy turned around and looked at me like. Look at me like, tone down your happiness.
Yeah.
And then like, getting offended, you're enjoying this entirely too much. Well, and I'm not having it.
I think that happens when you know, people may not be feeling very good about themselves. And I notice that when I do that, like in large groups, where there may be one or two people that are not into it at the very beginning, and they'll be kind of standing there with their arms crossed and kind of looking at me like, I'm not going to be laughing. You know, like they're not into it. But then once they start laughing, they really do get into it. But some people feel... They are afraid of letting go and afraid of how it might feel because they're so used to feeling a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I find that. And it takes a little bit, you know, once they start laughing, then they get into it. But sometimes there are some people that are just they're just really entrenched in their whatever feeling they're going through, whatever emotion, and they don't want to really just open up and laugh because, you know, laughing is, it leaves you feeling a little vulnerable.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I tell people that when we're doing it that, and what this play, you know, had this ton of silliness, like the silliness part, and that's going back to your childhood and, you know, when you felt free and silly. And it's a certain freedom that a lot of people kind of close in, you know, as they get older in our society and don't let themselves have that freedom.
About theater first. Comedy is not easy to do. It is not easy to be funny. I mean, that play is not easy to put on. Whether it's the comedic timing, mm-hmm. or just how you say a line, or the way you move your face. I mean, comedy is not funny. I mean, it's not. Comedy is not funny, so don't laugh! No, I mean, No, but you know, it's true. It's very difficult to do. It's very difficult to do.
Yeah, I mean, I when I teach clowning, it can be really difficult to sort of explain. How I always start is talk about the three tenets of comedy are repetition, exaggeration, and surprise. So any joke can be broken down into that. Mark saying comedy is not funny is surprise because we think we're going to hear comedy is not easy, and so that's what makes us laugh. And so any joke, my theory is any joke can be broken down into at least one of those, if not several of those, in some way. So that's the first thing I do in teaching comedy.
You know, I agree with that, but I did have a problem with the show, and that is the abuse and representation of sardines.
Mm.
It's the way those sardines were treated in this play.
Were there any sardines injured in this play?
I don't know, but PETA needs to get here and look after sardines in this show.
No sardines are injured.
The Sardine Liberation Front is now being formed.
And for those of you who are not catching that reference, you need to get down to the Everyman and see the play and save the sardines.
Mm. You don't have to be Norwegian or Jewish to love sardines. And the other part of it, and I was thinking about this when we were talking about laughing, is that there's also a thin line between laughter and ridicule. So laughter can maybe release those endorphins, which they do, healthy, but laughter and ridicule go hand in hand, which is also, that's the negative side of it. It's not always funny.
Well, the roast has sort of had this new resurgence lately. On like Comedy Central, they're doing roasts of everyone now. And some people are really good at roasting and some people are not. And my favorite TV show right now is RuPaul's Drag Race, and they do a roast every season. And it's fascinating to watch how some people just sound mean, and they're not mean people necessarily, but for some people they can sound funny, and that fine line is so hard to manage, and I don't know what the answer is. We were talking about Kathy Griffin and her issues right now, and how do we determine whether that was, you know, what makes it, what she thought it was funny in her head at one point. Like, she wouldn't have done it if she didn't think it was funny. So where does it turn? What's that? Where? How do we cross that line? How do we know which side of the line we're on? I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, but also depends. We're talking about polarization, whether you're conservative or whether or not you're liberal progressive. Depends on who thought it was funny or who might be feeling that way. But also, just talking about how can a bloody severed head in which she lifted up, symbolizing our current president, Mr. Donald Trump, be hysterical. For some people, the image, the thought of his head being severed and bloody is hysterical. It depends on what end of the political spectrum. But also saying, people say, how can a severed head be funny? Go back, I mentioned earlier, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. There is a scene with the Black Knight. The whole shtick, the joke is that the Black Knight is being dismembered by so-called King Arthur's knights, but he never gives up. Even when they cut off both his legs, blood's gushing, both his arms, he's a torso on the ground, kind of jumping himself up and down, saying, I still kill you. Come over here and I'll bite your knees off. That is hysterically funny. And when I was watching it, when I first saw it, I said, ugh, the blood. But then the fact that the knight doesn't stop or doesn't realize you have no legs, you have no arms, why are you still trying to attack? Maybe it could have been that Ms. Griffin should have had a stronger punchline. Maybe after lifting the severed head representing the president, if he could have kept speaking and said, you're still a loser. You call this a decapitation? Maybe you're talking about that. Maybe, but just doing it like that, you got to think about how it's going to be represented.
Neera?
Well, in my line of work, we always what I always say is that the best thing is to laugh at yourself and to laugh with others, but never laughing at others. Mm-hmm. And so it creates a safe space so that people can let go and just relax and laugh. knowing that, you know, we may be making silly faces or maybe jumping around like gorillas, but, you know, whatever it is, that we're doing it together and we're all benefiting from each other. And, you know, when we're making eye contact with each other, when you laugh, there's a real sociological connection, you know, deep, mm-hmm. you know, that say that when you laugh and share a laugh with somebody else and make eye contact, you really, really get amazing benefits. It really maximizes the benefits. And when you're laughing together, it's such a wonderful experience. But knowing that in that we're not laughing at each other, because that, sure.
Do you think that people that use humor to ridicule in a cruel way and actually feel pleasure from that?
What's that term? Come on. Shush.
Schadenfreude.
Yes.
Say that three times fast.
Schadenfreude. It's like Beetlejuice.
That gaining pleasure from the suffering of others. I think so, but I think that's a part of our lower selves. I do a lot of the scathing commentary of people and situations, but my thrust is that this is so stupid and wrong, and that women being objectified, people of color being marginalized, women being abused and hypersexualized, that's wrong. So let me say something about it within a joke that will get you to see how ridiculous it is. That is my hope. Maybe people say, like, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I think maybe that road to hell could be kind of pleasant and hysterically funny if the joke is right and the intention is good. But maliciousness, that's, I think, when it's when the motivation is your lower self, then you can sense it, but I think the intent of what it's for.
I mean, I think if you think about that, I mean, that what you were just saying, I mean, in human existence, there's some really thin lines here. And I think that there are people who do enjoy and get pleasure out of other people's pain, enjoy laughing at other people and ridiculing people. I mean, I think that's also part of life. I mean, that's part of our existence. And laughter has, laughter's not always funny, right? People laugh and they ridicule another human being. People laugh at other people's suffering. People laugh and point when they see somebody who was lynched in the South or the North. People laugh, you know, people laughed all the time. Nazis laughed when they ridiculed Jews in the street. That was funny. So humor is not always a positive thing. I mean, it comes in all kinds of forms. I think there's nothing, I think, unfortunately, that is simple.
Mm. Yeah, but it also comes a part of dehumanizing the other. When you view another human being as not as a human being, mm-hmm. that gives you the hubris mm-hmm. of not being concerned. If I don't view you as a woman as being equal to myself, for all the women here at this event and those listening right now, if I don't view you as a full human being, you're not possibly as intelligent as me as a man. You're not possibly able to earn as much as me. You don't have the intelligence to vote on your own. And if you're here just to sexually please me and feed me, then for me to degrade you and humiliate you and laugh at you and say that I can grab you by your meow, that makes it easy when you don't fully respect a human being as fully a human being.
So how does that play out as a happiness coach?
Well, I certainly, I don't recommend making fun of other people, because I think that actually internally causes a lot of struggles and a lot of issues. That's why, to live a healthy life, it's great to laugh at yourself and not to take yourself so seriously. But if you focus on trying to bring somebody else down, then you're focusing on the negative all the time, and it's more appropriate as far as if you want to live in that happy zone, to focus on your positives and what the positives are in your life, whether or not it's small things that you have every day. I tell people to focus on what they're grateful for. Before they go to sleep at night, to write three things that they're grateful for that day, three different things. And it's really amazing how the science has shown that if you do that for 21 days, you end up being a more positive person. It can actually change the way your brain works. And so if you focus on the positive and focus on, like the human being that's sitting in front of me and thinking like, wow, because, you can focus on the negative, but you can think of, wow, what a spectacular person I'm seeing. Like, oh, those jeans, or wow, the color, whatever, I love the way they're ripped just so, But it if you want to feel really good, then that's what you do. And then some people say, well, that's just a really, the other side of the coin is some people have said, well, it's kind of like a fake way of being. But I feel that that we really have control over our life and how we want to be. And so we can use the humor and laughter to get us to be feeling more positive and to have a happier life. It's okay to go through life with rose-colored glasses, but things happen, and you have to take it seriously.
Yeah.
But
yeah, we talked a lot about buoyancy in our training, and that's we were talking about how that's what makes something funny. Like looking at slapstick comedy, when you see people get hurt, they don't stay hurt. They bounce back. They come back. I mean, that's what's so great about Noises Off is they keep doing the play. It's terrible. But they keep going. We don't have any fear that they're going to stop doing the play. But it's just awful. And that's, and they're miserable. Well, we think it's hilarious because they're not suffering in a way that is painful. They push through. And so we can laugh with that.
But also, I'm sorry. But also about human resilience, that you feel for them, like, really? Apologize to the audience, give their money back, and stop this thing in the play. But no, it's human resilience. These fools keep trudging along, the human tenacity. Mm-hmm. We are gonna make it even at the end when the curtain don't work. They leap up to bring the curtain down so to close out the show. They never give up. And it's like what the old saying about insanity, you keep doing the same thing, expecting a different result. Well, all those people and the characters in the play are divinely insane. And just one other thing you were saying about being happy is kind of like people think it's altruistic and fake to focus on the happiness. But I think as a society we should flip it. We should flip that. Well, to focus on misery and degrading and humiliating, that's fake humanity. Yeah. I think we have the potential to be better, to get joy from other people, and let the fakeness be, when you're cruel, you're fake. You're not real. When you're not trying to uplift other people, and when you uplift other people, you know that you really uplift yourself. How many raise your hand, the best you've ever felt? Have you felt better when you have hurt someone or degraded them, or when you have helped somebody? Raise your hand if you felt better when you've helped somebody.
Yeah.
And sometimes a person doesn't even appreciate it, but you feel good, and other people may see that in you. That's real. I think the fake self is when it's easy to hurt. That's easy to be violent verbally, physically, intellectually, with political policies and laws you pass to hurt people. Now, I think that's fake.
One man's fake is another man's reality, though, sometimes. True. I mean, because people, you said people pass laws. So if you ask somebody, why did you pass a law that takes away somebody's food if they're poor, they would say, because I think they should learn how to work for it. That if you give them, it's going to hurt people to do that. I mean, people have different ideas about what is good.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one line for goodness. There's not one line for anything.
Yeah, until
right?
These people that you took their food from not bust down your door and come in your house and take your food out of your refrigerator.
Mammography. So we want you all to participate in this and your ideas and thoughts, what you've heard, but I'm holding the mic. I do this every time because it's mine. Because I want to control the sound, and that sometimes people talk in a mic, they talk up here. Well, this is what I really want to say. So you can't get into the mic, so I'm holding the mic. All right? So, first, how many people find it easy to laugh? Good. I don't have to ask the next question then. Good. You were going to say what?
I think there's a fine line between positive laughter and negative laughter. And I'm thinking of Don Rickles and the type of comedy that he did for 40 or 50 years. And he probably invented the roast by himself, frankly. But if you understood his comedy, it was humorous. If you didn't, it was tearing people down. Fine line.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's a lot of comics like that, right? The laughter is about, you're a putz. You know, just making fun of people. No thoughts?
It depends who it's focused on. You know, you can't just do it on the average person. You know, it has to be maybe somebody who is also, you know, shooting back, you know, funny lines or, you know, roasting back. So it's like a game. It's, you know, thought of more as like a game, like a fun activity, but not to be so hurtful to hit them where it's the pain point is beyond, you know, beyond going back. But I think, like, you know, the Don Rickles things was like a lot of fun, and it was a game amongst that group of his contemporaries.
But me coming out of the traditional comedy club circuit, I'm going to just tell you, I'm a work in progress. When I first started doing comedy, I just wanted to get work as a comic. I wanted to get in clubs, so I did a lot of stereotypical, misogynistic, race-baited, degrading kind of humor because it was popular and I could get booked, make money, pay my bills by doing that. Not until I got confident in my own voice was I able to write material and jokes that expressed a point of view that was more compassionate and embracing, and also ridiculing of policies and individuals who degraded other people. Some of the classic jokes out of Rickles' generation were degrading the women. How your wife, the person you chose to share your life with, is a blithering idiot. But people just laughed, and even women laughed. But I'm quite sure that the women weren't laughing that deeply. Maybe they felt it was their role to kind of perpetuate that. And that's what I'm talking about. So you have to evolve and grow. And I was guilty of that too. But things change. I guess, you know, women can be made fun of until a man who used to, a comic, do that joke, has a daughter. Now, is those jokes going to be funny now? What if it actually happens to your daughter? How do you feel then? And it'd be a shame that you have to become a father to appreciate the situation women, because you love your daughter, you don't want your daughter to be degraded. And that's kind of the sad thing. I think that we have great potential to be beautiful human beings if we just focus on the sanctity of who we are as human beings and not going towards our lower selves and viewing people as other.
Wickham?
It just got me started thinking about, a lot of people have this notion that women are not funny, or there's this bias against women in comedy. And, you know, the remake of Ghostbusters last year, you know, which started so much ire from a lot of men, and you know, which is all resurfacing again with the Wonder Woman all female viewings of it. It's that, I forgot where I was going with this, but there's this, it's hard to break out of that. And why, I think it's why you see a lot of female comics tend to the self-denigration, talking about their terrible sex life or how fat they are or that sort of thing. Like, talking about what is wrong with them. I mean, there's a lot of comics, male and female, who do that self-denigration, which can be really funny. But I think you tend to see it more in women because we're still dealing with some of that bias. I'm sure, you know, all of us in some way are trying to sort of balance that.
Do you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, as far as you were saying, self-deprecating, that's really, people relate to that the most.
Oh, sure.
And rather than insulting somebody else, when you can say something like that, and I'm not sure as far as the women aspect of it, but the when you make fun of yourself, you actually can heal yourself. It's a really good cathartic thing to do, to do it. You know, even like I gave an example before, we were talking about like somebody dropped something, and instead of being upset about it, you can make fun of yourself and just say, oh, of course I'm going to do that. That's like what I always do. You know, like you can just kind of make it like a funny. You don't have to be like, you know, drop down hysterical laughing about it, but you can make it a funny. And if you can do that, that'll help you really get through life and cope with life in general. And that's really some of the funniest people I know do that all the time. We were talking about how people that have a lot of issues in society, or whatever. Sometimes they're the ones that have the funniest jokes and can have the fastest quips about themselves or about their situations because it really helps them get through it. So,
well, I want to thank you all. This has been great. I thank all three of our panelists here. They're just amazing panelists. Let's give them a round
thank
of applause.
You.
Wickham Avery, Neera Berry, Coley Tangela, and thank you all. This has been great.
Thank you.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com.